Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This freshwater lake hosts over 10 million visitors per year, boasting white sand beaches and beautiful waters for boating, swimming, and fishing. But beneath the vast expanse of its surface lie sinister secrets. Some believe this watery gravesite is haunted by the apparitions of the victims it has claimed, while others tie its macabre reputation to the sins of the lake's creators. This week's episode is Lake Lanier, Part 1.
In the night, your heart fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinisterhood.
I'm gonna kill you. We've had a lot of requests to cover this one.
Indeed.
And I've been wanting to for a while. I know you have too. And so it seemed like the right time to do it. And man, was it a history lesson that
certainly
I wasn't aware of, and such an important one.
Oh, definitely. I had no idea. Aside from stuff you see on TikTok and then some stuff in the comments as well. Mm-hmm. And not to sound too corny, but it goes deep. It goes very
much
deep.
Much deeper than usually TikToks are going right to go into, because it's just the spookiness of it. But the real scary tragedy of it all is much more sinister than that.
No, most definitely. And it's that time of year where people are probably already getting out back out mm-hmm. onto this lake, as it is, as we'll talk about, become such an attraction for everyone in the area. But you got to be careful when you're out there for a lot of reasons. But yeah, we've gotten at least 4 people have sent it in via the form. So shout out to Dwayne, Morgan, Rihanna, and Carla, who sent that in. And if y'all have something you want to send in, go to sinisterhood.com/contact. And there's a button that says submit a main feed episode suggestion, and we might pick it. So thank
absolutely
y'all for doing that.
Yeah, but especially when multiple people send in the same one. We notice that and we're like, okay, we give the people what they want.
We give you what they want. I almost said where there's smoke, there's fire, but that was triggering for me because my dryer set on fire today. So I don't want to talk about it.
I told you probably 20 years ago, mm-hmm. a dryer repairman told me, never leave your dryer running if you're not at home, because it could catch fire. And is it worth it? Because I would do that. I'd be like, oh, I'm going to be efficient and run the dryer. So when I get back, well, it's never worth it. So I haven't done it since. And I'm glad that my years long anxiety paid off today.
I was just repairman. He was right. No, my mom was in the living room. I was on the toilet and I just heard, no. Paris, 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 there's a fire. And I'm like, oh God. And so I'm trying to jump up as reasonably quickly as I can. Of course, he runs in there. He put it out with the towel. I run in with the fire extinguisher unnecessarily, but everyone keep like a fire blanket and a fire extinguisher next mm-hmm. to your dryer, and don't leave it running while you're not home. That's, you're like, you the shouldn't. Second person that's actually third. My mom was like, this is why you don't leave your dryer when you're gone. I was like, no, I won't. So luckily the flames were like, 6 inches. It wasn't anything crazy because we caught it. But given that it's that chemical burn mm-hmm. and it's the electrical fire and the electricity is still going to the source of it, that if we weren't home or if nobody noticed, I told Paris, thank God my mom was here, because I was earlier working out on the back porch. He's in the back of the house at his office. Like, it could have burned for like mm-hmm. 5-10 minutes. I mean, just like, it's not going to kill us and burn the house down, but it's like, extensive damage.
Electrical fires are scary, though. Right. That shit gets in the wall, and then you're like, don't even know where all it is.
I'm not trying to have that.
But no. Well,
anyway, this is a lot of water to put that fire
out. I'm glad that you survived. I barely survived this past week. So thank you, everyone, for being patient with us, taking some time off, because what we're thinking is norovirus ran through our house and community over here. And my God, I've never been sicker in my entire life.
I just want to say, I am so happy I did not get it. And I mean that.
Me too.
Because I heard, we were over there when it all started. It was 11 p.m. like a week, over 7 days ago.
Yeah.
And she came out of her room and the sound of
Ella
came out of her room and the sounds that we all recognize as someone having a tough time throwing up in the bathroom.
We were like, is she sick? And then I went in there. I was like, oh my God, I've never like seen my child. I was like, first of all, good on you for trying to go to the bathroom.
Thank you. Right.
I'm surprised she didn't just wake up. But goddamn, I'm so glad you and Paris didn't get it.
Me somehow, too. I mean, you got
Simon and Tommy have escaped it too. I did not. Neither did my mom.
I know. I was surprised when you were like, I feel okay. And then we were going to go to record what was going to be this episode last week. And then you're like, I'll be okay. And then you're like, I'm not okay. I feel weird. And then you're like, oh no. And then you text me a picture 6 hours later of an IV in your arm because a person came to your house. I was like, this is fucking serious. Yeah. I had norovirus one time 2 years ago. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, my best friend.
The sickest I've ever been in my life. Tommy was like, I think we should go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Because, and sorry for a metaphor. We should have given that warning at the beginning. But I was like, ain't no way I'm getting in a car.
No.
So luckily, online it said the mobile IV place was closed, but Tommy was like, I'm going to call just to see. And they were like, we have one nurse available. I was like, thank you, universe.
Please.
And she was so very sweet, but she came out and I got to lay in bed while they hook you up and do it all. It's an invaluable service. Tons cheaper than if I had gone to the ER, even with insurance. Unreal.
When I recently went to the ER with insurance, it was $650 just to visit. So I'm like, if you're less than that, that was worth it.
There you go. And
there
I got to lay in my bed.
Yes.
And
I just sit there for 7 hours. So.
She's an ER nurse. In her other job, so I got to hear fucked up stories about people going to the ER, so that was fun too.
Which always ends with someone shoving something up their ass. So.
Truly, she said, one of the most memorable was someone had fallen on a Corona bottle in the shower. My first question, why, was it full? She said, no. And that's the problem. Because the suction of the bottle created some issues that required that person going into surgery. A story you have to tell your boss of why you're calling in the next day. And probably for a while.
It happens to the best of us. Who hasn't cracked a cold one in the shower, pounded it, you set it on the side, and when you go to shave your leg, you slip and then straight up the ass every time. It's the worst. Most of the time I can work it out. I don't have to go to the ER, but good to know that there's gentle hands.
She said a lot of people come in, and like a lot of times it's shampoo bottles. I was like, y'all, they know it's not. Mm-mm. So just be real, because they know. And also, they've seen it 1,000 times before, so just say the truth.
My tip is, like, just get a butt plug or a dildo. Mm. Like, just
probably
get a
safer
thing. Yes, get a thing that's made for that.
Yeah.
Don't shove herbal essences up your cram hole, because it's not, you're not going to make the sounds like the lady on the commercial going, ooh, ah. It's going to be like, oh, ah.
For a second, maybe. And then you're like, ah. And definitely not an empty glass bottle.
No.
That, you know, science and suction.
No.
And then you end up in the emergency room. But all that to say,
sorry you were ill, but you got a
story. I'm feeling much better now. And today, honestly, is the first day I felt like probably 100%. Even yesterday, like, it really was a lot to bounce back from.
No, definitely. Well, I'm glad you have bounced back, and we're about to bounce right into all this. And we're going all the way back to before the lake even existed to start you off, because you can't know what's on top of the surface of a lake. You don't know what's underneath.
You can't know what's underneath unless you know what's on top.
But I'm saying too, you can't, like, you're on top. You're like, this is a great lake. Oh, bitch, yeah. How do you know? Yeah. How do you know what's going on underneath you?
Yeah. I guess either way. Yeah.
Yeah. You and need the whole picture.
This is why Christy doesn't love lakes. And we'll get into it because of stuff we'll talk about here. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get into it. Often called the most haunted lake in the world, Lake Lanier is a man-made lake located in northern Georgia, about 60 miles northeast of Atlanta. It spans five counties, Hall, Forsyth, Dawson, Gwinnett, and Lumpkin. With 692 miles of shoreline, it has a surface area of 38,000 acres and reaches depths of up to 160 feet deep. When full, the lake holds about 625 billion gallons of water. For comparison, its surface area is almost the size of the entire Walt Disney World Resort.
I think it's 950,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools is also another equivalency.
My God.
Huge!
Almost a million Olympic-sized swimming pools. It is huge, yeah.
And
it,
I mean, the whole resort, I'm like trying to get the calculation. It's like all of the parks of Disney are 40,000 acres. So this is just a hair smaller.
Damn.
It's huge.
And that's when you don't know what's going on underneath. It's a huge swath of a huge area to not know exactly what you're working with.
Some say the same about Disney World. No, yeah, honestly. What's going on under the tunnels?
There's a whole world underneath Disney World, too.
It's all under our feet.
Mm-hmm. With its picturesque beauty and white sand beaches, Lake Lanier is a hot spot for recreation, seeing around 10 million visitors per year. But it's not only for fun. The lake also offers flood control, generates hydroelectric power, and provides drinking water to more than 5 million people, including over 70% of Metro Atlanta residents. While both beautiful and useful, it's earned a notorious reputation for hundreds of deaths, disappearances, and persistent rumors of hauntings. Before colonists arrived in the area, the lands beneath the surface of what is now Lake Lanier belonged to the Cherokee and Muscogee Creek people. In 1838, they were among the indigenous nations forcibly removed from their homelands in what is now northern Georgia, including the area that would later become Lake Lanier. This removal was the result of the Indian Removal Act, a federal law signed by President Andrew Jackson in 1830, which authorized the U.S. government to displace Native nations in the Southeast to open land for white settlers.
I just learned something interesting about this time period, that 1832 was the Wooster v. Georgia decision, which was a white missionary in Georgia who ran afoul of a new Georgia law that said any white people working on Native American land has to get a permit from the state of Georgia. And the Native American tribes were like, we're sovereign nations. No, they don't. And so this fight sort of between states trying to exercise dominion over Native Americans goes all the way to the Supreme Court. 1832, you have Wooster v. Georgia, in which the majority opinion, Chief Justice John Marshall says, the Cherokee Nation was a distinct political community. It's, you know, the state of Georgia can't impose its laws on it. President at the time, Andrew Jackson, just said he wasn't going to enforce it. He said, John Marshall made his decision. Now let him enforce it. So they didn't enforce it. Georgia ignored the ruling. Georgia continued to violate the sovereignty of the Cherokees, arresting them, intimidating them. The government, the federal government, did nothing to stop it. And then just six short years later, the Indian Removal Act is now put into practice, and the eradication of those folks from that area shortly followed. So it is startling to see what happens when a president ignores a Supreme Court order.
It is. It's startling to see when a president says, I don't give a shit what anybody says. I'm going to do whatever I want from my own agenda.
It was wacky and wild. I'm like, has a president ever ignored a Supreme Court decision before? And it was like, yeah, actually, it was Wooster v. Georgia. I'm like, fuck, we're talking about that.
I know.
This week.
Man, time is a flat circle.
Yeah. Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Approximately 16,000 Cherokee and 19,600 Muscogee people were driven west, many on foot, in journeys marked by disease, hunger, and exposure. They were forced to walk over 1,000 miles in winter conditions. Thousands died along the way. The Cherokee remember this event as the Trail Where They Cried, also known as the Trail of Tears. Forced to leave everything behind except what they could carry, the Cherokee and Muscogee also left behind their deceased loved ones in burial mounds. The land then became part of Forsyth County, Georgia. During the Reconstruction era in the late 1800s, a town was founded on the site, called Oscarville, reportedly after a local postmaster named Oscar, soon became a thriving, predominantly Black community. Velma Fan, historian for the New South Association, told Netflix that while many of the historical records of Oscarville have been destroyed, its stories have been told in photographs and oral histories of descendants. By the early 1900s, Oscarville was thriving, counting among its residents renowned poultry farmers and workers in skilled trades such as carpentry, blacksmithing, and bricklaying. On September 5, 1912, Ellen Grice, a 22-year-old white woman living in Forsyth County, alleged that a Black man had broken into her home and assaulted her in her husband's absence. A search party apprehended Tony Howell, a 22-year-old Black man living in the area, accusing him of the attack. Alongside Howell, Isaiah Perkle, Fate Chester, Joe Rogers, and Johnny Bates were arrested as alleged accomplices and transported to the county jail in the nearby town of Cumming.
I think we're about to see the power of an accusation from a white woman.
Yes.
And all of those other defendants were Black.
Not a ton has changed. It's wild how we're talking about the early 1900s, and there's still so many parallels that we can draw in 2025.
Oh, yeah. And the parallels will continue.
2 days later, on September 7th, news of the arrest incited a white mob to gather at the jailhouse. Reverend Grant Smith, a Black preacher, attempted to address the crowd, but was brutally beaten. The sheriff and his deputy intervened, providing Smith refuge within the courthouse. Simultaneously, Black residents attending a nearby barbecue learned of the assault on Smith and headed toward town, prompting rumors among white locals that they intended to set off bombs. In response, armed white men amassed in the town square. The mayor's attempts to disperse the crowd were unsuccessful, leading to the deployment of the National Guard, which eventually quelled the unrest.
But it's so fast, things just spread where, you know, it's back then it was verbally spreading. Now yeah. You have rumors spreading on social media, but you're right, just like the masses of people that are reactionary instead of saying, well, we need to see what the, you know, whatever this trial is going to result in. But instead it's like, let's go storm it and pull them out of there.
Yeah. You assume, and the rumor starts getting spread that bombs are going to be set off mm-hmm. when a peaceful protest was most likely to mm-hmm. ensue. You know, I mean, when white people say, oh, this is about to happen, then it's like wildfire.
Yeah. I think when they beat the preacher is kind of like, you know, making angry remarks at the crowd. They beat him in response. And then you start to go, they're going to break into that jail and mm-hmm. lynch these men. Because that's, you know, that's usually how those things ended.
For sure. The next day on September 8th, an 18-year-old white woman named May Crow went missing after visiting her aunt in Forsyth County. She was discovered the following day in the woods near her home, unconscious with severe injuries, including a slashed throat. She remained comatose for several days. A small pocket mirror found nearby was linked to 16-year-old Ernest Knox, a Black resident. Under duress, Knox confessed to the attack and was arrested. Fearing mob violence, authorities transferred him to the Fulton County Jail in Atlanta. Subsequent rumors of accomplices led to the arrest of Rob Edwards, Oscar Daniel, and Ed Collins, who were kept in Forsyth County.
So I think you have the first allegation happen and then those mobs all, you know, descend. And then just the next day or like 2 days later, another person has been attacked. So you're like, okay, well, those first guys were all locked up. So yeah. If you have some sort of serial attacker or just now, I think people are predisposed to be like, I bet it's another one of them coming mm-hmm. after one of us. And so you are more predisposed to go, well, who owns this mirror that we found in the woods?
Yeah.
A teenager.
And a 16-year-old who, you know, who, if you're being pressured by a bunch of white cops to confess to something, we've seen time and time again, under duress, false confessions come out of that. So, you know, I don't know that we can 100% say either way if he did or didn't, but there's always a good chance that he didn't and he was forced into confessing.
Yeah, there was no Miranda rights. They weren't recording these statements back then.
No, certainly. No, no. On September 10th, a white mob of over 1,000 stormed the Forsyth County Jail and seized one of the suspects, Rob Edwards. They lynched him in downtown Cumming, shooting his body multiple times. Following May Crow's death on September 23rd from her injuries, Ernest Knox, Oscar Daniel, and Ed Collins were charged with her murder and sexual assault. Their trial commenced on October 3rd. After an hour of deliberations, they were found guilty by the all-white jury and sentenced to hang. Despite laws mandating private executions, a public hanging was conducted on October 25th, witnessed by approximately 1,000 people.
And yeah, they were not supposed to have a public execution, but the sheriff built a fence, a loose fence, around where the hanging would happen, and the public knocked the fence down immediately. And the sheriff said, well, we don't really have time to build another fence, so we're just going to do it here. You guys know there's no fence, and it's going to be at this day and this time, but it's not public. The fence just fell. Like, that's the kind of, you know, it's like, yeah. Well, those private, the executions were private back then. It's like, yeah, on paper.
Yeah, yeah.
But practically.
I will never not be just disgusted that so many people for so long went and witnessed these voluntarily. Mm. Children, families,
yeah,
men, women, whoever. To want to see someone experience that suffering and death is so dark and twisted to me I just never, it's as many times as we talk about it or read it, I'm always just like, God, at the core of it, people really at times want to see others suffer. They want to see someone held accountable in the most heinous way possible, especially when, you know, race relations were at an all-time low.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's there's part of it that it straight up is just hate. It's not specifically mm-hmm. those men. It's just like any men. But if there is a racial motivation, and it was extremely popular to take photos of these and make mm-hmm. them into postcards and send them around with the dates on them. And it might have been PBS Frontline or something. Paris and I were watching a short mini documentary on YouTube about it, though, about the prevalence of the lynching postcards and things like that. And I think it's vital that we recognize that that's a thing that people did, right? Because we mm-hmm. go, the internet has made us so violent. And it's like, we are violent at our core, right? Like,
yeah.
It is human nature. It is the stronger, more difficult thing not to be violent, right? It's easy to smash and destroy. It's very hard to be withholding of that and go like, oh, I'm going to redirect my rage comfortably or like healthily. It's like, no, they just wanted nasty, yeah. nasty violence.
And in such a brutal way,
mm-hmm.
you know, that hanging is like just, I don't know, it hits me in a way that other, you know, I mm-hmm. mean, recently there was someone that chose to die by execution by a firing squad.
Yeah, second one, actually. South Carolina did one in March and they just had their second one.
Wow.
This month.
And
I'm a little fixated on that. I've been
if you can choose, because I think they can choose between lethal injection, firing squad, or hanging.
No, electric chair.
Okay, so hanging's been taken off the table.
Yeah.
Which kind of speaks volumes. That we yes. have these other three brutally ways of killing people,
mm-hmm.
but we've taken that one away,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know why. Was it not violent enough? Was it too violent?
It's ineffective. Yeah. It's ineffective. I think it takes much yeah. longer to die. Yeah. You have to really get it, to not to get too in the weeds on it, but if the noose isn't correct, the person's going to suffocate versus a broken neck versus... I watched the witnesses to that initial death by firing squad, and it is remarkably, the firing squad is the most, probably in my opinion, humane, given that it's three bullets from three guns, which is crazy because it's not even one of the guns is unloaded. So then it's like plausible deniability. Like all three of you know you shot this guy, mm-hmm. but that it's within about 2 minutes, the person passes away versus an electric chair. It's like a 2 minute jolt, a pause, and then another long jolt. And then lethal injection can be up to 20 minutes, depending on some of the issues that have happened mm-hmm. in South Carolina. And I think it was just a couple months ago, a gentleman, his autopsy showed that he had drowning. It was similar to drowning in his lungs. So versus it's supposed to stop your heart, but it did not. So
yeah, that one seems the most painful, in my mm-hmm. opinion, mm-hmm. of the ways you could choose.
And can go bad. And with this hanging and with the lynching, I think too, it is the fact that they could leave the body hanging. Mm-hmm. I think you're right. It's the most painful. It's the most barbaric. And it's sort of the most message sending and
symbolic
with Rob Edwards. They left Rob Edwards' body up for days and shot at it. Like people used it as target practice. So just that ongoing desecration and dehumanization and demoralization of a victim. Even if, in my opinion, even if they're a murderer, I don't care if they're a serial killer. I don't want us to be a society that tortures people.
Yeah,
that's why I'm like, do we not understand that? Like, we don't want to be the baddies.
No, I mean, and like you said, this is just a fence has fallen down. So children, mm-hmm. whoever's mm-hmm. is seeing this, and that's then what you grow up with thinking is normal and okay.
Absolutely.
In the aftermath, white vigilantes terrorized black residents of Forsyth County, including Oscarville, through threats, arson, and violence. Black businesses and churches were burned, homes raided, and families forced to flee by swimming across the Chattahoochee River, often abandoning property or selling it at significant losses. By December of 1912, headlines celebrated the expulsion of black residents, with notices warning anyone remaining to leave or face death. This campaign of terror effectively drove out the majority of black citizens from the area.
The headlines are wild. The newspaper articles say, get out while you still can. I mean, it's reminiscent. Currently, there are Department of Homeland Security commercials going, if you're an illegal, leave town, leave, mm-hmm. leave. And it was these newspaper articles going, of course, they did not say black residents or African-American right. residents, but they basically said, get out of Forsyth County. And if any white person is found having helped them, you're next.
Yeah. I mean, we saw that also in Germany and other mm-hmm. places too. If you were a person helping Jews, then you also were next. So there were people that, you know, the good ones, like, you know, I like to think we would have been the ones, you know, helping people escape and whatnot. But that fear is so just rampant that like, well, even if I'm caught helping someone, mm-hmm. I could be hung and then people are shooting at my body for days. Mm-hmm. What do you do? I mean, you probably leave.
Yeah, you had to. I mean, went door to door, sort of these white vigilantes. It wasn't even like the sheriff came to tell you to leave. It's just like your neighbors with guns show up and tell you to get the fuck out. And
almost like ICE.
I mean, it's freaky. You know, their faces are covered. And mm-hmm. the descendants of these folks have spoken on camera and given interviews like, the historian said, you know, it's like these oral histories is all we have left, and talked about one of the guys said his wife and kids were at the house. He was like trying to walk home. The vigilantes catch him and are like literally chase him they chased the people to the shores of the Chattahoochee and were like, you better be able to swim, which not all of them could or knew how to or were afraid of. And the guy's like, my granddaddy basically like jumped in the water and had to swim knowing his wife and kids were left behind. He said he never found them, never saw them again. But this guy's like, but then, you know, my grandpa goes to a new town, finds a new wife, has kids, and like, that's my lineage. And so then you're like having to grapple with like, my entire existence is predicated on an ouster of people, you know?
Yeah. And then that wife and kids are at home being like, where's my husband? Where's dad?
Or ran to a riverside and had to jump in and drowned. You know, he's like,
I never see him again.
Yeah. Cause you know, you couldn't really make contact as easily, but it's not that many generations far removed, right? Like 1912 is not that far away. And so it's vital to me to like look at the ugliest pieces of history and be like, it's whether you hate it or love it, it's fucking real. Like it's really,
you can't be erased no matter who says, pull these books off the shelf or wipe these internets of whatever. It happened. And to, ignore it or deny it is to deny these people's lived experiences. And also, if we don't learn from history, we're condemned to repeat it. And look at what is happening now. Now, a man was ripped from his family from ICE and is sitting in an El Salvadorian prison.
Yeah.
Much, you know, he didn't have to swim a river. It's even worse. He's rotting in a prison that is notorious for all sorts of abuse.
If he's alive.
If he's alive. Yeah.
Which is the concern. I don't think we've
had proof of life.
No, but that is a concern. But you're right. It's like, how are you failing a your history is repeating itself. You're failing an open note test, bro. Like, you literally could just learn this. But that's why I like to learn. And, you know, I had no idea about this stuff until we started. I love the TikTok videos, right? Of like, ooh, there's a town under the water.
Yeah.
Spooky. And it's like, it's spooky for a lot of reasons.
Yeah. Decades later, close family friend of May Crow, speaking anonymously in the Surviving Lake Lanier documentary, suggested that the individuals accused of the attack were wrongfully implicated. Family friend indicated that someone else was the actual perpetrator, and May's father, a sheriff's deputy, had been responsible for wrongly implicating the black men hung for the crime.
And I think that's what it was like the family friend said, you know, it was this guy that I believe they used the term developmentally disabled, like somebody that maybe, you know, had some struggles in the community. But I think you see, hey, a county over, they got these guys a couple days ago. Probably the same thing happened here. Mm-hmm. And then it just takes a suspect and you just pin it on them.
Especially a sheriff's deputy. Yeah. You know?
And then you have people all riled up for somebody that didn't even do it. And then a bunch of people get forced out of their homes.
Mm-hmm.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
With black residents ousted, only a few inhabitants remained in the area, once known as Oscarville. The shells of the once thriving businesses, churches, homes, and even the racetrack began crumbling. The graveyards were left behind, with black residents no longer welcome in Forsyth County, as evidenced by signs and newspaper articles warning them to stay away. In the late 1940s, the metro Atlanta area was thriving, and water resources were limited to the nearby Chattahoochee and Chestatee Rivers. The Army Corps of Engineers devised a plan to create what is now known as the Buford Dam to provide a more reliable water source for the booming area. The dam's creation required massive government acquisition of land via eminent domain. As a result, many residents lost their homes and farms, often sold at a loss.
Yeah, I mean, eminent domain sucks.
So that just means the government can come in and just be like, this is ours now, right?
Yeah. I mean, the eminent domain is the government has the constitutional power to seize private property for public use, provided it pays just compensation. It's rooted in the Fifth Amendment, and the taking must serve a legitimate public purpose, and the compensation has to be just and fair and reflect fair market value. The issue of that is there's lawyers who their entire practice is merely fighting for people who are being their lands being taken by eminent domain, and the lawyer fights to get as much money as possible. And you're like, for these reasons, your fair market value is not right. It should be more, because a lot of times you can't really fight them. You know, they're the government. They're going to kind of decide, hey, Coca-Cola just started a bottling plant. That was one of the issues. There's a shitload of people just moved to Atlanta. We're sucking this bitch dry. We've got to have more water. And so if you have a good lawyer, the lawyer can help you fight for a higher value. These people were already very poor and did not have lawyers, you know, did not have access to like the best in the biz. And so when you say, well, we think that, you know, $40 an acre or whatever is a good deal, or $4 an acre probably is a good deal. you can't really argue. And you're like, but my family's been here for like a million generations and it's our only form of food because we're farmers. They're like, sucks. Well, here's the money for the land. See you later. Yeah. And it's like, you're now cutting generational wealth.
Yeah. And I imagine you wouldn't know really the value of your land. And if you didn't have a lawyer to be able to tell you that, you might think $40 an acre is a good deal when really they're like, we should be giving them $1,000 an acre, you know?
Yeah, they're going to come in with the lowest bid. For sure. And, you know, fair market value is like what a willing buyer would pay a willing seller. And there's no, you know, duress or compulsion or anything like that. And you use comp sales and whatnot. But unless you know to ask for comp sales, or if everybody around you is also getting swindled, then suddenly it's like, well, we paid your neighbor. It's like, you paid my neighbor peanuts. And they're like, and that's what you will get as well.
Yeah. In 1951, as preparations for the Buford Dam and Lake Lanier began, archaeologists began excavating Native American burial mounds in the area, including one known as the Summerer Mound. Their work disturbed sacred sites tied to the Mississippian culture, ancestral to the Muscogee Nation. Though some artifacts were preserved, the mounds were ultimately destroyed. The lands where indigenous ancestors were laid to rest were flooded, without consent from descendant communities, along with the rest of the land, in February of 1956.
I mean, it's the disrespect and the disregard of sovereignty continues. Yeah. It's like, not only did we uproot and kill a lot of your descendants, but now we're going to go back and dig up and shit on your ancestors.
Or we're going to flood this area where they were buried, so now you don't get to go back and visit their burial site and pay respects. They're now 160 feet underwater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, if you want to go see him, you better put on a scuba gear. Oh, you can't. We dug him up first.
Yeah.
And it was like, who? Like a Native American affiliated archaeologist? No, it would not be. It would be.
And also, did you?
No.
Did you dig them all up?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, well, the Army Corps of Engineers, I think it was in 2020, the guy's like, well, the technology back then was not robust so that we would have been able to detect where all of the burial grounds were. I'm like, so you didn't? Because they said at the time that they did, but you didn't.
No. The lake officially opened in 1956 and was named after Confederate poet Sidney Lanier. In all, 50,000 acres were submerged as a result. Many of the Oscarville structures were left standing, including the famous racetrack. In all, there were 20 cemeteries in the flooded area, and to this day, experts debate whether the bodies were truly relocated as the government claimed. Biologist Phil Torres dove into an adjoining body of water and discovered an undisturbed graveyard around 160 feet below the surface. This indicated to experts on Expedition X that the graves had likely not been removed, but instead hidden beneath silt over time.
Well, first of all, naming this for a Confederate poet, despite him writing a poem called Song of the Chattahoochee, they call him the literary son of Georgia, but I think it's very telling that you would displace and uproot these people and then name the area after a Confederate.
Absolutely.
But we got to talk about Phil Torres and Expedition X.
One good thing came out of all of this, and that was the discovery of Phil Torres.
I was like, how have I not watched this show before? I had to text you and I'm like, excuse me. Why have we not been watching Expedition X? This man is amazing and brilliant. First of all, he's a wonderful biologist. He's really good at assessing situations and coming up with scientific explanations without sounding like a douchebag, because the other person on the show is a paranormal investigator. And so he's kind of more bringing the science. She's bringing more the paranormal side of it. But even when she's like, perhaps this is paranormal, he's not like, okay. He's like, maybe. Could it be wind? Could it be that? Let's test it. But he did go down on a dive, and it's fucking freaky when he's moving the silt and you can see like the headstones dated just before 1912, like just before this all would have happened. So it's very clearly Oscarville people.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, why didn't we name the lake Oscarville Lake?
Yeah. Lake great Oscar. Question.
You know, right? Like of all, like
I can think at of the a very few reasons.
Least, I know, but I mean because especially everyone knew like, what it was, or maybe at some point now we should have petitioned for the name to be changed, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. In the mid 20th century, the South in particular was entrenched in this lost cause romanticism. And so I'm assuming naming a massive federal water project after a Confederate veteran and Southern poet sort of makes them feel like they're symbolically reclaiming their cultural pride. I find lost cause romanticism extremely cringe. It's why I think if people get married at a plantation, that's super gross. But I think that's probably why, you know, they're like, we've got to name it by about one of our boys out there. And you're like, that's why this, because you feel like you won, even though you lost.
And it's a way to erase all the atrocities you committed. And eventually you're like, well, eventually people just remember it as the Confederate soldier, like not what really happened.
Truly, it silences the indigenous, the black culture underneath it. It's literally founded on top of, and that's what one of the people in Surviving Lake Lanier, one of the women, she's a black woman. She survived a drowning attempt. And she's like, it took me until adulthood to even hear about this history. Like, it's not as prevalent back, you know, I think it is more now, especially with the advent of the internet and TikTok. Like, people post about, oh, this spooky lake. And then folks in the comments are like, well, there's for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
So it sucks that, you know, even people that enjoy it, some still don't even know.
Yeah. Only a few years after the lake opened, on the evening of April 16th, 1958, two young mothers, Delia Young and Susie Roberts, headed across the newly built bridge, bound for a dance at the Three Gables Club in Dawsonville. After the dance, they stopped for gas and were last seen leaving the pumps in their 1952 Ford sedan. Somewhere along the way, the car plunged off the Lanier Bridge into the dark waters of the lake. Despite search efforts, no signs of the vehicle or the women was found at the time. Around 18 months later, the decomposed body of a woman surfaced in Lake Lanier near the bridge. Missing both hands and several toes, the woman was never definitively identified, though many believed it was Delia Parker Young, based on the remains of a blue dress found on the body. Same as she had been wearing the night she disappeared. Susie remained missing, but locals began to whisper about a ghostly woman in a flowing blue dress seen wandering the bridge at night. She was often described as handless and disoriented, as if searching for something or someone. This spectral figure became known as the Lady of the Lake, and her legend quickly became one of the lake's most enduring hauntings. Fishermen and late-night motorists spoke of a figure in a flowing blue dress wandering near Jerry D. Jackson Bridge, where the crash occurred. For over 30 years, the truth behind the Lady of the Lake remained unresolved. Then, in 1990, construction crews repairing the Lanier Bridge made a startling discovery. Submerged in the lake below, they found a rusted-out Ford sedan full of mud. Inside the vehicle were human remains still strapped into the seat, confirmed to be Susie Roberts. With the discovery of the car and her body, it became clear that the remains found in 1959 had been Delia Parker Young. The two were buried in the Alta Vista Cemetery nearby.
I don't know why this makes me so sad to think it. Just to think about,
story.
You know, just to think about, I don't think that, you know, the ghost part, of course, I think is people projecting or whatever, but just to, you know, think of someone's remains just sitting still buckled in their seat. Like, I think everybody deserves a rest, and you're probably not getting it when you're on a lake and people are, you know, fishing over the top.
Right.
That feeling of like, there's something missing. Like they said, the families put up gravestones that had, you know, their birth date and their missing date. Mm-hmm. But that until Susie's body was found, that then they got another gravestone, you know, after that, kind of marking that closure for the family. Cause it's like, you know, she's not coming back, but it still means something to that family. So the tragedy of this is absolutely that the body was not found for so long, but I can see how it becomes a legend, especially the detail of the flowing blue dress, which if I'm not mistaken, she had borrowed from a friend. So it was like, they, you know, people knew what she was wearing. Mm-hmm. And then when that body was found months later, but the idea that you see a, you know, a handless woman in a flowing dress walking is eerie enough, but it, to know that it's based on someone is, adds a layer.
Also, people are swimming and boating and all sorts of stuff on this lake, completely unaware that this is happening below. And that is not just limited to Lake Lanier. And this is why I don't like lakes.
Like, this is part of the reason. Because
you don't know what's going on down there. And I remember someone once saying, if you were in a pool, like a swimming pool, how big would it have to be if someone was like, somewhere in this pool, there's a dead body?
decomposing for over 30 years.
And you're like, okay, well, how big does the pool have to be before I'm like, nope, I'm getting out? Because that's what lakes are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so even if you're like, well, this lake is the size of almost a million Olympic swimming pools. Okay. Well, 100 swimming pools away from where you are is where this woman has died in her car. Are you still cool with swimming over here?
And there's not
fishing
like,
and eating the fish that are coming out of that?
It's because it's not, she's in a swimming pool and then you're in a separate swimming pool. It's no big swimming
you're
pool.
All, you know? That's what I'm saying. Like,
too much.
When close. Someone was like, if you were in a swimming pool and somebody said, there's a dead body over here, like, would you be okay with that? Like, no. How big does the pool have to get? And I'm like, there's no amount of bigness of the pool.
600 billion therefore, gallons.
That's lake what this is. The same thing. Like, it's, you know, I mean, and bodies aside, like creatures, animals, whatever, of course, are down there too.
Yeah, you don't think about it too much because you can't because it makes you freak out. But yeah, certainly when we've gone to the lake with my family and, you know, rent a boat or whatever and put the anchor out and then it's like dragging the ground, I'm like, God almighty, what if it drug up and hit something?
Or you jump in and it's just brown because that's the lakes here look like.
Yeah,
and you're like, I don't know what's right beneath my feet. I don't know what's swimming around me.
The really horrible thing is I got a thing for my iPhone last summer when we took the nieces to Granbury and I was like filming them, you know, in the lake and it's like keeps my phone waterproof. And then I was like, oh, I'll like put it under the lake to see there. You can't see shit.
No.
It's murky. I couldn't see 3 feet in front of my arm. And I thought, I'm going to get back on the boat.
Yeah.
So this year we're just staying in the swimming pool when we go to Granbury.
And I mean, I grew up going to lakes too. And yeah. I love being near lakes.
I like a boat on a lake.
At my point in this, in life where I am now, I don't need to be submerged in a lake or have my legs dangling underneath.
The water. I don't want anything to grab at me, especially on a lake like this one.
Or just brush my leg. It makes me, I can't relax if that's happening.
Sinister Hood will be right back. Sinister Hood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it. So your dollar goes a long way.
Visit progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
By the 1960s, Lake Lanier had begun to cultivate a chilling reputation. Beneath its glassy surface lay not just cold, dark water, but also the submerged skeleton of an erased community, Oscarville. As visitation to the lake increased, and as more people used it for recreation, fatalities steadily rose. Although the Army Corps of Engineers had cleared many visible obstacles when creating the lake in the 1950s, they left behind a deadly legacy beneath the surface. Trees, building foundations, unmarked graves, and rusting machinery. These submerged hazards ensnared swimmers, damaged boats, and contributed to a growing number of unexplained drownings.
My mom used to say close enough for government work, and now I see why. Because they did not dig everything up.
No!
And I didn't think about this, but biologist Phil Torres from Expedition X, I left out the fact that he's so fine.
He's very
like it's like hard to look at. He's so beautiful.
Man,
he's
imagine perfect. If my biology teacher,
dude,
I might be a scientist right now. My biology teacher looked like that. Goddamn. I would have
cured every disease, every infectious disease.
Oh man.
But he made a really good point because he was like, when you have an unnatural man-made water system, you've now created new unnatural currents that are gonna, it's not gonna function and move like a regular lake. It's gonna move different because it doesn't have just a plain flat bottom or even like bottom that has been eroded over water movement over time. It's like a racetrack and like a church.
A whole fucking town down yes. there. There could be like an abandoned house. There's straight up yeah. full mm-hmm. ass trees. And that's also what's so scary about specifically this lake, but lakes too, is like you don't like never dive headfirst into no. a body of water like that you can't see what's going on, because like you hit one of these fucking things and you're done, you know? Yeah. I mean, or you're swimming along and there's rusted machinery beneath you and you slice your foot open. Now you got a fucking infection.
Yeah.
Or you just get caught up in it and you drown. It's so hazardous that it's crazy that like they allow as many people to be on it as they do.
Especially, I mean, this was the 60s, but yeah, you're like, wait till part two. It hasn't. They haven't stopped. The deaths haven't stopped. But even in the 60s, I mean, and now too, but all the newspaper articles I found, the majority of what it got written about back then was like the huge fluctuations in the water levels.
Yeah.
So even if you're like, well, I go on there and there's nothing wrong. Well, yeah, in the year where the lake is high, but when mm-hmm. it is lower, like you said, even if you go, well, last year we drove our boat over here and I dove in fine and it's moved, you know, 50 feet and you're not aware, you're not paying attention. So a lot of it's like, you ain't supposed to be, when you're making unnatural things, it's like you ain't supposed to be there and the land yeah. knows it and is trying to
even oust natural
people.
Things like lakes, like you don't know what's down there. And kind of like the dryer thing, you mm-hmm. hear somebody tell it to you and it sticks with you. And I'm like, never dive into something like that because you don't know what you could bump into or just, you know, dive head first into.
You're right. You're told about it, but when you know a person, it really makes mm-hmm. it more real.
Soon the drownings and boating accidents began to draw public concern. In particular, Christmas Day of 1964 became the single deadliest day in the lake's history. Two families from Gainesville, Georgia, the Browns and the Rogers, were traveling together in a station wagon, headed to an orchard to pick apples for their Christmas dinner, when the unthinkable occurred. Their vehicle crashed down a 30-foot embankment, barreled off the road, and plunged into the frigid waters of Lake Lanier. The crash reportedly happened after the car clipped a guardrail and then struck a power pole with such force that the pole snapped in half. Passersby, along with members of the local fire department dive team, jumped into the freezing water in a desperate attempt to save those trapped in the submerged car. However, they were hindered by the extremely poor visibility and treacherous underwater conditions. Despite their best efforts, only one child survived. The other seven lives were lost beneath the water, adding a deep emotional scar to the lake's already troubled history.
And like, that's going to be tragic no matter when it happens. But I think it's something that the community does not forget when it happens on a holiday like that.
Yeah. And half of the victims are kids. Yeah.
Yeah. Families.
I'll tell you, this is one of those fears of mine that's like, it might be irrational, but I'm like plummeting off of a bridge into water is such a fear of mine, which how to increase your chances of survival.
Throw
first
your window
thing
down.
Is don't panic, which is very hard to do when you've just done that. Huge proponent for those mm-hmm. things we were just talking about, the little tools that like cracks your windshield, cuts your seatbelt, does something else. And I keep one on the visor in the car just in case.
Smart. You I never move know. Mine. Mine's in my glove box, but I got to move it out because there's probably stuff behind like napkins. And that's not, it's like, luckily I knew where the fire extinguisher was.
Right.
So it was in the guest bathroom and I could just grab it. So I need to have that little in case I ever do, because I'm scared of bridges. I don't like to drive over bridges,
same.
Be on bridges. I'm less terrified of high rises, but bridges, bridge over troubled water. It doesn't even have to be troubled water. I don't want to be over it. I don't like them.
I've realized just in the past few years how much of a fear of heights I've developed, which I didn't really have growing up. But when we went camping, I told you, and we mm-hmm. went on that hike, and it was just no railing and a cliffside down and tons of kids. I was like, I'm going to have a panic attack. I got to go back to the car, because all I could envision was people falling over and like that, and falling over bridges is mm-hmm. just such, I don't know, man. It makes my stomach drop. Just the thought of it.
It's freaky enough to just, like I said, drive over a bridge over water. But have you seen online our highways are kind of viral, like in multiple different
635.
All the high five. So in multiple TikToks, YouTube videos and stuff, people are like, the most deadly, freakiest highways in the whole country. And I'm like, that looks familiar. I'm like, I used to work in that building. They're like, Dallas, Texas. I'm like, hey,
it is an insane system of highways.
People in the comments are like, it's insane to me that the tallest, the highest of the high five is like 130 feet down. And they're like, that's crazy. Your cars just drive over it. I'm like, the cars don't drive over it, you guys. They speed over it unless they're in a horrifying gridlock situation in which every case, then people are just tailgating you and honking at you.
And so then you're like, how much fucking weight can this bridge withstand before we all just plummet?
It's just a huge truck behind you just sitting on it.
I will go out of my way to not go over a bridge like that.
Call me whatever you want to call me, an old lady or whatever. But my new friend is avoid highways on my Apple Maps. Like I just try to I just be taking the slow way places now.
Because I don't even drive far enough to go on a highway anymore. So I usually don't have to. But I really try. That's a good tip.
I try to avoid the highways but of course yesterday I volunteered to go pick up dinner and people are just like tailgating me, honking at me because it was like rush hour. And I'm like, why am I out at this time?
I know. And Dallas is ranked as one of the worst cities to drive in. And of all the places we have gone on tour and traveled, Tommy is our driver. And he has always said Dallas is still the worst place he's ever driven.
Look at that. We're number one on some list. Not a great list, but we're number one.
We're number one somewhere. Despite the mounting accidents, safety protocols around Lake Lanier remained worryingly lax. There were, and still are, no lifeguards on duty. And swim areas are designated, quote, swim at your own risk. Compounding the danger was the fact that most drowning victims weren't wearing life jackets. Indeed, no one has ever drowned in the lake while wearing one. PSA, wear your life jackets, don't dive into lakes, and always wear a life jacket, no matter how strong of a swimmer you are.
I don't understand. To me, we need to shame people who don't wear them. It's like helmets. Like, back in the day, it's like, you're going to wear a helmet, dork. I'm like, I wear helmets. I told you I went on that horseback ride. I was the only person in Big Bend on the horseback ride in a helmet. Because I was like,
for you.
This is my moneymaker, baby.
Harris didn't wear one?
No, he did not. He's like, I took riding lessons in summer camp.
But it doesn't matter. There's still wild animals. Ella, when she was a separate camping trip, also half the girls got norovirus in their dads while it was there and came 3 a.m. Tommy was like, I could just hear the echoes down the hallway of the cabin. I'm like, I would have crawled into the woods like an animal and died. I don't know how anybody did it. I mean, they were driving back at 4 a.m. with their kids in the back just with buckets. I'm like, nightmare.
You never want to get it, but at least y'all got it at your house. Like, thank God. But but on the camping
trip. They all went horseback riding and I said, did you wear a helmet? And she was like, yep. And they all wore helmets. So I'm like,
hell yeah.
You have to. And like, I didn't ever wear a helmet bike riding growing up in the 80s and 90s. And now it's weird to see kids around the neighborhood without them. And anytime I do, I'm like, put on a helmet, no matter how old you are. Riding a motorcycle, every time I see somebody in the highway without one, I'm like, no matter how good of a driver you think you are or a rider, it's still a wild animal. I'm not worried about myself as I am about everybody else.
So I'm like, look around, baby.
It's unpredictable. So why risk it? You know what I mean? Don't leave your dryer running. Don't ride a bike without a helmet.
This is just a good advice episode. When I had a motorcycle head to toe, I wore a full face helmet. And whenever I did, it was rainy and I slipped on my bike. Thank God the full face helmet had a scratch along the side of it. I'm like, well, that would have been my cheek and probably my jaw. And I still broke my ribs, but luckily I had no road rash. Because I would always wear a jacket. And I'm like, our meat sacks are fragile. They're on loan for us. Like, we don't get to keep them forever. Like, be gentle with it. So I'm a big proponent of life jackets. My niece likes to put one on her legs and then one on her shoulders. Oh, smart. So she's like double life jacket.
I'm life jacketed up. Yeah. The kids don't, unless we're in a swimming pool and we're right there. And and Ella knows how to swim. Simon's still in floaties, but any kind of like ocean or lake where there's currents and things that are out of your control, no matter your age, wear a life jacket.
For sure.
And the fact that like literally there's never been a drowning on this, it's one of the most dangerous lakes in the world if someone's been wearing one, that's pretty proof positive that they work.
It's one of those where it's like, I don't think that like the verdicts out on Life Jacket. Like they work. Like, I'm pretty sure we know
they work. I'm pretty sure we all decided a long time ago that they work and we should all use them. Right. And why? Because, like, you think they look stupid or you don't like the feel of it. Okay, well, what if it would save your life?
Also, you can get them with, like, prints on it. Like, get it with, like, a shark printed on it or something cool. Yeah.
Get a life jacket that look. You know how they have those like bathing suit cover ups that look like your bathing suit, like a bikini. Get a life jacket, but that.
My friend Amy got me one of those t-shirts from Galveston. It's like a bikini body and a string bikini. Yeah, I think
I've seen you wear that.
Oh yes, I bet you have. I still wear it. Thanks, Amy. Love you.
Those are fun. I do remember those growing up. Just like the terry cloth ones we saw the other day. You're like, damn, that takes me back having a swimsuit cover up like that.
Hell yeah.
Low life jacket usage wasn't the only problem. Poor signage and underestimation of the lake's dangers and the presence of submerged debris led to boating collisions, capsizing, and other fatal mishaps. By the time national media started noticing the unusually high death toll decades later, the patterns had already long been established. The 1970s saw the rise of Lake Lanier Island's resort, an ambitious project that promised luxury and family fun. New attractions like Big Beach and Lanier World drew massive crowds, while local leaders like Stacy Dixon of the Lake Lanier Convention and Visitors Bureau described the area as
the economic driving force for tourism in the area.
But this surge in popularity coincided with a haunting undercurrent. As tourists soaked up the sun, rumors swirled, not just of drownings and boating accidents, but of ghosts, phantoms, and ancient wrongs bubbling up from the past. Locals in the 1970s and 80s increasingly shared chilling stories of cold hands grabbing the ankles of unsuspecting swimmers, shadowy figures walking on water, and phantom lights glowing beneath the surface. These tales were more than campfire gossip. They were reflections of a community coming to grips with a lake built atop the erased town of a once thriving Black community.
Well, yeah, and the people would say they would hear the echoes of church bells or almost like sensing, whether consciously or subconsciously, like, I'm like, are you really hearing the echoes of church bells or are you getting wrapped up in, oh my God, this used to be a town.
Yeah.
Fuck. I wonder you're what's like, going
oh, on. We're just going to go tubing and sunbathe. And then when you're like, oh, that's how this lake was made. It kind of, I mean, it would put a damper on my day for sure. I mean, like, it's a beautiful lake. When the pictures and stuff, gorgeous. It would be very difficult, and I don't know that I would go on the lake.
Yeah, I mean, I know folks that live there and are boat people and love to go boating on this and don't really care, and interesting take. It's one thing to kind of say, and there have been Black boaters have said, like, we want to recognize that this was once Oscarville. We also want to emphasize boat safety and water safety for people and say, understand and respect what you're getting into and don't take it lightly. And also understand that while you are having fun, throw a little respect to the people that came before you and understand, like, with gratitude, we enjoy this lake. Sorry for what happened to y'all. Like, you don't have to say, well, we'll never go to the lake again. Some people, though, the vibes are off and are like, I ain't getting in there. But others, I think, have tried to find ways to sort of reclaim it. But I can definitely see by the 1970s and 80s, you're far enough removed from it that it's not, like, quite literally the news. But it's not so far gone that, like, nobody's talking about it at all, especially still with, like, the crashes, the 64 crash, the 58 crash of Susie and Delia. So I think you still have enough, like, recency of death that there's, like, that's when the campfire tales begin.
Yeah. And also the factual danger of it all.
Literally.
You know, I mean, like, that, like, boating, maybe, but, like, swimming or jumping off a boat, like, I just wouldn't feel comfortable doing that.
Like, you just don't know what's down there.
Yeah, yeah. What made these stories especially chilling was the knowledge that structures had been left behind when the lake was created. Homes, a racetrack, churches, graveyards, and even barbed wire fences. Divers in the 80s reported running into trees still standing upright, entangling limbs and pulling them deeper. When droughts lowered the lake's level, eerie remnants would emerge, rusted tire parts, concrete foundations, and broken steps leading to nowhere.
Some people even claim that they have found floating gravestones, or I don't, to the extent that's true, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised you find floating something.
Yeah.
Because, you know, just depending on the undercurrent, or if somebody, a boat drives over it or divers are down there, you knock it loose. I don't want to be diving nowhere where there's barbed wire. That's just my preference.
No, or swimming where I might get entangled in that. But
no,
I don't know for sure, but I imagine this is also kind of one of those dark tourist destinations, or where people that, you know, do deep dives in abandoned ships that would find something like this from a historical point very interesting and go down there and find stuff. So fucking dangerous, though. I mean, yeah. I think for a lot of people, that's kind of the thrill of it. And I can understand, like our boy Phil is like diving down there. But like, you saw what he saw.
Mm-hmm. It's very silty. I mean, when he went down there and was walking, he only walked a few steps. Of course, he started to get hypoxia, where like he started to get like lightheaded. But because that's the danger of being down so deep, it's like 43 meters down with, you know, equipment, but still. Mm-hmm. But as he walked, he kicks up silt just by the nature of the dirt that was once down there, because it's not a natural lake bottom. It's a man-made lake bottom. So again, it's now the environment has begun adapting to what was down there, which is silting over structures so you might not see them. And then when you do walk down there, you kick up the silt, which then decreases visibility, which makes it even more dangerous. So say you are in a drowning situation and you're kicking around and people are kicking around you, that might kick up some of the silt. So now you really, really can't see where you're going. So it's, we needed water for Atlanta.
Yeah.
It seemed like the best reason although the Atlanta mayor did not agree to the part of the funding for it. And then technically like the city of Atlanta was just stealing water until like the 70s. There was like all these lawsuits, but one wonders if like when you get in and start meddling and you fuck it up, like you're now going to cause a hazard.
Yeah, for sure.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Sinisterhood is brought to you by Progressive Insurance.
Fiscally responsible financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds.
Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way.
Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
While locals enjoyed fireworks shows and water slides above, tragedy unfolded below. The 70s and 80s were marred by a sharp increase in drownings, and by the mid-1980s, things had turned dire. Nearly three dozen bodies remained unrecovered, lost in the lake's 160-foot depths and murky terrain. In response, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers launched major cleanup efforts in the 80s. They cleared submerged debris and installed alert buoys after what was described as an
especially deadly stretch.
But even officials admitted their limitations, with Cesar Ybor of the Corps admitting,
"It's probable that unanticipated finds of human remains are possible, whether from antebellum and Civil War periods or of Native American origin." You got to admit it.
So, yeah. And again, how big of a body of water are you comfortable swimming in knowing that there's three dozen unrecovered bodies?
Yeah.
It's plus like all the ones that were buried and not removed.
Yeah. Every time this is mentioned, someone always mentions poltergeist and is like,
yeah,
you moved the grave markers, but not the graves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's,
what happened there.
You know, all of a sudden your TV's static and there's a clown choking your kid out. But truly, I think that there comes a point where it's not so far removed that it's like, oh, that's like an old burial site from thousands of years ago that people can kind of like brush off. It's like, there's like three dozen people that like we can go find the recent newspaper articles for. That to me, that like ups the danger and probably ups the public outcry. And then that's how you get the response. But it sucks that like so many people have to die before the Army Corps of Engineers was like, sounds like we got to cut some of those trees back. And it's like, yeah, I think so.
And it's wild that the lake is so big and there are so many hazards underneath that 36 bodies could not be found because they're stuck somewhere, you know, entangled with something. That's how treacherous things under the water are.
Mm-hmm. And especially those currents, you don't kind of know where they're getting sucked.
As the 1980s closed, Lake Lanier had become a symbol of contradiction, a place where families played on sunlit beaches while divers recovered bodies in silence, and vacationers dined by lanterns as rumors of underwater lights flickered in local taverns. Locals spoke of the lake with reverence and caution, a mixture of pride in its beauty and fear of its curse.
I think that's still kind of the vibe today. If the comments are to be believed on videos of Lake Lanier, y'all tell us. But you'll often see people, it's either like, we go there all the time and it is super creepy, or my family don't fuck with Lake Lanier.
Yeah. Or it's gorgeous. We go, we love it. There's no problems. We have, well, okay. So I guess there's three ways you could look at it.
Throughout the 1990s, the strange and often unexplainable stories surrounding the lake gained traction beyond local whispers. National media began to spotlight the bizarre death toll and the legends tied to its depths. The persistent accidents, despite safety campaigns and Corps of Engineers interventions, created a narrative that went beyond coincidence. This uptick in deaths sparked a question that moved beyond safety concerns. Was Lake Lanier cursed? Local lore had long included tales like the Lady of the Lake, phantom boats, and ghostly hands dragging swimmers under. But in the 90s, these stories began to be retold in books, documentaries, and eventually internet forums.
Oh, that's how they're going to spread, is the internet.
Mm-hmm. In 1990, 17-year-old Kristen Nicole Davis drowned while swimming in the lake, another name added to the growing list of young victims. That same decade, numerous reports surfaced of boaters vanishing after calm weather accidents and divers becoming disoriented, reporting odd underwater currents and inexplicable feelings of dread. These stories were picked up by regional news outlets and paranormal researchers, including local author Katie Bell, who said,
"People go missing out here and it's like the lake swallows them whole. Sometimes they don't come back, sometimes they do, but they're never the same."
By the end of the 90s, Lake Lanier was no longer just a site of tragedy. It had become a modern Southern Gothic legend. Its reputation for being haunted wasn't just based on old superstitions, but fueled by a pattern of loss, a shadowy past, and a sense that something unseen watched from the depths. So what do we think?
Ooh, well, first of all, I love the idea that you're inspired by a lake to become a paranormal researcher. I don't know if she was inspired by that, but I think that she's onto something of there's a feeling that when you have unrecovered bodies, that it's this powerful thing. And I think water, if you're into the, you know, paranormal side of things, like water is a conductor of energy. Also sort of the idea of energy. If you put a bunch of water on someone's land, on their stories, kind of the idea of that they're is a story that wants to break out or wants to be told. And whether, again, that's consciously or subconsciously, that you're truly like a ghost came to me, or it is my own guilt of understanding the gravity of what happened here has upset me and disoriented me. It could be that as well. But for a lot of folks that go diving, they're like, I've never had anything like it happen. Like, I've never felt that way. You know, Phil Torres, even like I said, he like got epoxy and started like feeling disoriented and that could have been, you know, lack of oxygen. But I think also you are overcome perhaps with the gravitas of what's happening.
That's what I was going to say. It would be hard not to be overcome and overwhelmed with the history. And like when you, if you stop having fun and just sit for a second and think about everything, you know, inexplicable dread, remorse, sadness, loss, all of those things I think are would be natural to feel, and fear of like the ghost story, sure, but also like the actual lives that we know have been lost and were never recovered. And also all the just shit down there that didn't get recovered that you could run into or get tangled up in. It's pretty dangerous.
No, certainly. And I think the ghost stories probably would not have lasted as long as they did. And the reputation of the lake would not be what it is if it were not for so many people dying there, sadly. Mm-hmm. And I think for the most part, everyone that has, you know, drowned at the lake has been a victim of, you know, whether the water was too cold, they hit their head, like of natural accidents and natural reasoning for it. But when you combine them all together, it certainly makes people feel a type of way. And when you see statistics in the newspaper, which were published around this time, going like, Lake Lanier has three times the amount of deaths or three times the amount of incidents than these other lakes. Granted, yeah, it's bigger than other lakes, but even when you account for like people per square foot or people per square acre or whatever, it's still a larger percentage. So You're right. I think the reputation, one sort of feeds the other, right? Like you have this like paranormal fascination and then it's like, well, yeah, it probably is haunted because all the people that died there. And it's like, yeah, also there's like a whole city under there. Like what? Yeah, they ousted everybody. They killed them all and they took their land. What? And it's like, it's like your conscience starts to make you go, like, yeah, well, if that was me, I would come back and haunt the shit out of people. And it's like, well, yeah, I don't know, maybe. Or maybe it's just you feel bad.
The logical side is like, this is an extra treacherous lake then, because most lakes don't have a flooded city underneath them with all the trappings of danger that can come along with that.
No, certainly. Well, part two, we've got even more incidents, more stuff about hauntings and the lake up till today.
Yeah.
So, well, can't wait.
Let us know if you, because I know we have a lot of listeners that live in this area. If you've got a tale from Lake Lanier, send it in to sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. We'd love to hear your stories.
Yeah, we could do an Oops All Lake Lanier episode if we got some good tales.
We will for sure. Well, if you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Heather's Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling can be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
And if you're not sure what we're doing over there, first of all, you can always join for free. And there's it's not a free trial. It doesn't expire. If you're a join as a free member, you can join us on Sunday Scaries. You can go and check out all of our monthly archive bonus content that we release for free for members on that tier. So do that. But if you want to explore a tier, we have a free trial. Explore the tier for a week. You can check out all the perks. And if you cancel before the trial is over, you won't get charged. But if you do stick around, what kind of things do folks get?
You can get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As on the third Thursday of every month, quarterly live bonus content, and those things are filmed. And you can, so even if you don't watch them live, you get the whole back catalog too. You get weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Absolutely. Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, submit your odd but true tales for Freaky Friday, and send in whatever bizarre or hilarious video you want us to live react to during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. Don't worry, it's still totally free on Patreon. Again, you just signed up to be a free member. Here's another perk. You also get monthly audio content sent to you for free. There's a lot of stuff you just get just for signing up for free.
Because we appreciate being able to stay in touch with y'all. Absolutely. So thank you.
You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2025. Speaking of being on the water.
Hell yeah. This is not lake water, though. This is ocean water, baby. And we are going to be on the ultimate true crime festival at sea from November 3rd through 7th. Not just us. It's Henry and Ed from last podcast, Scared to Death, True Crime Campfire, and you. We're all going on vacation together. We're going to have a great time. Not only are we going to do live performance, we're going to have some fun extra bonus stuff. But if you book now, the next 20 cabins, people might have booked since we've announced this, but the next few cabins that get booked and the people that have already booked, you guys are going to get an intimate Q&A with me and Christy. So we get to hang out with y'all and spend time with you. And that's just for signing up. It's not anything you have to buy extra. And it's also not going to be for sale. So they're keeping it to the first few people that sign up. So Do it now over at crimewaveatsea.com/sinister. Get your fan code and get your cabin.
It's going to be amazing. There's going to be so many other fans there. You get to do true crime fan meetups, Q&As. We're all doing live podcast recordings, but then also, like, I think somebody is hosting a belly flop contest and a karaoke night, and fingers crossed, we're going to get a game show somehow.
But
we're leaving out of Fort Lauderdale. We're going to the Bahamas. We're going through the Bermuda Triangle.
That's why I signed up. Honestly, I was like, I don't really want to go on a cruise. And they're like, we're going to the Bermuda Triangle. And I was like, you can't keep me away. You cannot keep me away. I'm going to see an alien.
So head on over to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us on TikTok and YouTube at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. Also, if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk, a little boost, maybe some advice from us, book a cameo now. From happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on any accomplishment, big or small, we would love to celebrate with you by creating a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's a very thoughtful gift. It's 100% unique. Even if you get a cameo for someone that somebody else got a cameo for, doesn't matter. It's going to be different every time because we base it on what you say in the paragraph. So you can never have too many cameos. There's no script. You give us the script. Yeah. You tell us what to say. It's the perfect gift if you're not trying to go shop somewhere, go out, get on traffic, drive the high five, any of that shit. Stay at home.
No.
Order a cameo from your toilet. It couldn't be easier.
No bridges required.
No bridges. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for supporting the show on Patreon. Here are your special Patreon shoutouts. Maeve and Erica Comer.
Miss B. Haven.
Susan.
Francis Costello.
Emily Whitley.
Bella Roddy.
Hannah.
Kirsten Clater.
Christian.
Mish Jenkins.
Heather Featherstone.
First of all, great name.
Fellow Heather.
Kimberly Clausen.
Aaron.
And Lauren Elizabeth, thank you all so much for supporting the show. We could not do this without you. You all have beautiful names, and we hope we pronounce them all correctly. Stay safe, stay healthy, and keep it creepy.
Sinister.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V26 Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Visit Lowe's and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.